from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. Coming up a little later in the show, we'll hear from Senator Chuck Grassley, who's here to discuss the confirmation hearing for Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. Also, Christina Arriaga is back this week to discuss the ministerial summit that happened at the beginning of this past week that focused on religious freedom around the world. But first, one of the keynote speakers at the first ever Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom event was the director of the Office of Management and Budget, Mick Mulvaney. Mr. Mulvaney joined Family Research Council President Tony Perkins on Thursday to share some of the highlights of that event.
Mick, welcome.
Tony, thank you so much for having me.
You're passionate about this, and you drew a strong contrast between this administration's commitment to religious freedom and what we've seen coming out of Washington in recent years.
Yeah, I wasn't going to go over there and speak. I've been involved in this sort of behind the scenes for a couple of years. My time on the Hill, worked with Congressman Jeff Fortenberry, Congressman Gosar on the issue of religious liberties, especially for Christian minorities around the world. But I wasn't really going to go over and get involved. But the vice president, who I've worked with since I got in the administration, asked me to go over and speak. And I said, Mr. Vice President, who cares what the budget director thinks? He goes, Mick, no, the people need to know that it's more than just, the folks who they think should be involved with religious liberties. It's everybody. So I went over to point out that even though folks didn't know who I was there on behalf of the dozens, if not hundreds of members of this administration who care about this issue. We do discuss it every single day. We discuss it in budget matters. We discuss it in diplomatic matters. Religious liberties mean a lot to a lot of folks in the Trump administration. I hope I was able, at least in a small way, to get that across to the folks who are participating in the larger event.
Oh, Mick, I think it was crystal clear. I mean, when you look at this is look at the lineup. You've got a president who's committed to it, a vice president who lives and breathes this. You have a Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, been on this program just last week talking about this. He made the call for this ministerial. Sam Brownback, who I've known for over 20 years, he has lived and breathed this. I mean, you just go on down the line. This administration is committed to this, and this is a time in which we can get some things done.
It is. Well, it's a time that we have to make up for some past failures. The previous administration, I'm not even sure they said the right things about this issue, but they certainly didn't do anything about this issue. And I think the message went out that America didn't care about especially Christians overseas anymore. And nothing could be further from the truth. I know that it was a big deal on the House when I was a member there from 2011 through 2017. But we just had trouble breaking through with the Obama administration. They come in and say nice things to us privately. They wouldn't say much publicly, and they certainly didn't do anything. So we feel like we're sort of making up for lost time. And it was so exciting to be there today and see Mike Pompeo speak and then Vice President Pence speak and see the look on people's faces that was that sort of had the impression they were saying, finally, finally, it's so good to hear this from the United States of America. We need to lead on the issue. One of the things I was so excited to hear, I was talking to Brian Hook, one of the deputies at state, and he said one of the sort of unintended positive consequences of the meetings was that they had several dozen impromptu bilateral meetings with different groups who were just happened to be in town for this. So it's one of those things that America can help contribute to by leading on the issue. So it was neat to be a part of and neat to see that that things are different now that Donald Trump is president.
Yeah, and it's giving rise to other countries that are doing some things. You and I had breakfast actually this morning at the Hungarian Embassy, and Hungary has been leading out on this issue of focusing on, you mentioned a minute ago, your commitment on the persecution of Christians, and that's what Hungary is focused on. You had a galvanizing experience in which you saw what ISIS and you heard about what ISIS was doing, and that really kind of drew you into this, not that you weren't a defender of the first freedom before, but how we have to go abroad and help the persecuted.
Yeah, it was a meeting I had in Rome a couple summers ago with a member of one of the Eastern Christian churches who are present and have been present for a long time in Syria. And they've actually pointed out to me that they are the indigenous peoples in Eastern Syria. They were there before the Muslims were, and how the stories they told about the actual persecution. When I say persecution, we think that not being able to speak our minds is persecution.
Right.
Persecution there means they come into your home, demand that you either give them your daughters for the sex trade, or you convert, or they start shooting your children in front of you. That is persecution. That is terror. And that's something that I think that we don't fully appreciate. And thank goodness we don't fully appreciate it as Christians in the West. But the simple fact to hear their stories, has to sort of motivate you. And if it doesn't stir you, it should stir you to some type of action. And again, that's why I keep coming back to why this ministerial was such a big deal, because while it was 2 days of talking, there was real action put to it. Look what just happened in Turkey yesterday. We're making progress there. Look at the commitment that we've made financially just over the last couple of days. Look at the commitment that the vice president made today, that this is going to not just be a one-time thing, this ministerial, but it's going to be an annual meeting. We are committing to the long haul on this. So we're finally starting to put actions behind our intent, and that's really a good feeling.
And Mick, I think he increased your workload. He created the International Religious Freedom Fund, which I assume you're going to be putting money into and writing checks for.
That's the stuff to write checks for. I mean, right. I was so moved this morning to go to breakfast with Hungary, a little tiny country, and they spent $16 million last year. But they did it so effectively that they probably have a bigger impact than countries spending 5 and 10 times as much. So there's smart ways to spend money. And that's part of my job at the Office of Management and Budget. So the neat thing about it is that my job is I take the direction of the president and the vice president. They say, I want to do X. And then they turn it over to folks like me and Mike Pompeo. And Mike figures out how to do X. And I figure out how to pay for X and do it efficiently. And so it's a team effort. But again, it's all pointed in the same direction for the first time, I think, since I've been in Washington, and that's been at least a decade now.
Oh, I think it's the first time in a long, long time, and it's refreshing, and I'm excited to see what may happen as a result of these commitments made today by the vice president on behalf of the administration. And glad, Mick Mulvaney, there are folks like you in place, and I want to thank you for joining us today.
Well, thanks for getting the word out there, and thanks to the folks who listen, who participated in driving these debates, because if folks back home don't care enough, then politicians don't care enough. So it really does mean a lot when folks back home get engaged. So thanks for that.
You can find out more about Mr. Mulvaney, as well as the Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom, when you head over to tonyperkins.com and follow the links. Also, I want to invite you to be a part of keeping Washington Watch on the air. Your involvement through notes of encouragement, prayer, and your financial support are vital as we bring you this program week after week. Simply go to tonyperkins.com and drop us a line or make a contribution. Again, that's tonyperkins.com. We'll be right back.
Let's keep the momentum going in this fall's election by voting your values. If you're like me, you care a lot about where our culture is headed. Now is the time to stand for biblical truth and fight for faith, family, and freedom in the public square. To be equipped for this mission, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on September 21st through 23rd in Washington, D.C., and join hundreds of Americans who, like you, want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Invited and confirmed speakers at this conference include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Paul Ryan, Laura Ingraham, Diamond and Silk, Kirk Cameron, Dana Lash, Ben Carson, Sean Hannity, and Mark Levin. On September 21st through 23rd, stand with Values Voters to keep the momentum going. Visit valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808 for more information.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. One of our guests from last week is back with us again this week. You'll recall that Christina Arriaga was on her way back from Turkey last week when she called in to talk to FRC President Tony Perkins about Pastor Andrew Brunson's court hearing in Turkey. Christina is the vice chairman of the U.S. Council on International Religious Freedom and also attended the ministerial this week. As of the time this program was produced, Pastor Brunson was at his home in Turkey under house arrest, and Christina joined Tony on Thursday to talk about that. But we'll begin this segment as Tony introduces a clip of Vice President Mike Pence from the Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom.
One of the big stories coming out of this week in the ministerial is yesterday, as we talked about, American pastor Andrew Brunson was released from jail to house arrest. Now, Vice President Pence, I was communicating with his team today, they are absolutely committed to seeing Pastor Brunson back in the States free, not just in under house arrest. And this is what the vice president had to say. He had some very strong words for the Turkish president, Erdogan.
Pastor Andrew Brunson deserves to be free. If Turkey does not take immediate action to free this innocent man of faith and send him home to America, the United States will impose significant sanctions on Turkey until Pastor Andrew Brunson is free.
With us now is Christina Arriaga. She is one of my fellow commissioners at the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom, and she has been working on this case of Pastor Brunson for quite some time. Christina, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
I know that you have to be encouraged. I know it's you want to see Pastor Brunson free, but he's under house arrest. But the increasing pressure that this administration is placing on Turkey has to be encouraging to you.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, right before I jumped on this call, I got a phone call from a reporter in Turkey saying, why is the government going from 0 to 100? Clearly, Turkey is getting the signal very, very that the vice president and the president are on this and they're not going to back up.
Yeah, this was not just mere saber rattling. I mean, a very specific increased sanctions. I think Turkey is feeling the pressure. But I think our listeners need to understand that Pastor Brunson is not in a safe place.
No, not at all. I spoke to someone today who actually FaceTimed with Pastor Brunson and his wife. He's wearing a recording or device around his leg, meaning that the wherever he is, the Turkish government can tell where he is. But also, as he was entering his home while being released, apparently there were some people cheering him on, but there were also some people shouting out things about Pastor Brunson is guilty. He shouldn't have been released. And I myself got a tweet today from a member of parliament in Turkey saying, you know that he was not in jail for religious reasons. Why are you pretending? So obviously this has turned up the volume in some places, and this could be very, very dangerous for Pastor Brunson and for his wife.
Yeah, I spoke with one of the attorneys on his case today at the ministerial, and there is security at his home. And there's efforts underway to actually enhance that. But I think the clear message, I mean, in the vice president, obviously speaking on behalf of the president, he made that clear, took this forum on religious freedom to send a very strong, unequivocal, clear message to the Turkish government that they expect Pastor Brunson to be released and they're going to hold them accountable for what happens.
Absolutely. The Turkish government has to know that they can no longer delay Pastor Brunson's release without very, very serious consequences. And these consequences, if these sanctions are put in place, the consequences will be devastating for an economy that is already in a precarious situation. And the lira, the Turkish coin, is extremely unstable, and Erdogan is desperate to stabilize the economy so that the population feel better about the fact that they just reelected him.
Now, Christina, you're in your second term on the Commission for International Religious Freedom, but you've been involved in advocacy work for a number of years. This direct confrontation with Turkey over religious freedom is going to have implications far beyond the country of Turkey, because this is sending a message to other terrorists and tyrants that America is going to defend religious freedom.
Yes, and the rumor on the street for many years in the diplomatic circles in the European Union was that the United States would never stand up to Turkey because Turkey is so key to that entire very unstable region. And the president and the vice president made it very clear today that they are going to stand up to Turkey. Of course, the entire Middle East is watching this right now to see how the United States is going to deal with this and how Turkey is going to react.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very, very critical and a real opportunity. I think this administration is seizing to protect and promote religious freedom around the globe. Christina Arriaga, thank you so much for joining us. As always, great to have you on the program.
Thank you so much, Tony.
Again, that was Christina Arriaga, Vice Chair of the U.S. Council on International Religious Freedom. To find out more, just head over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, and you can donate when you visit TonyPerkins.com. We'll be right back with more Washington Watch right after this.
Did you know that faith-based adoption providers have played a big role in caring for our country's most vulnerable children? Sadly, liberal state and local governments, with the help of activist groups like the ACLU, are targeting these providers and forcing them to choose between renouncing their religion or shutting down. When this sort of discrimination occurs, a fundamental American right is violated, and innocent children are harmed. Many families seeking to adopt are families of faith, and they want to work with a faith-based agency that shares their beliefs. If they can't do so because no religious agencies are allowed to exist, they may leave the marketplace, leaving their desire to adopt unfulfilled and children without potential adoptive parents. Representative Mike Kelly has a solution to this tragic assault on religious freedom, a solution that protects faith-based adoption and foster care providers, as well as the children they serve. Visit frc.org/lectures to learn more about this issue.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Normally, August is a hot and sticky month in our nation's capital, and the members of Congress can't wait to get back to their home states for a little downtime and a chance to meet with their constituents. But this year is going to be a little different. Here to talk about the canceling of the August recess in the Senate and what your senators will be working on is the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, representing the great people of Iowa, Chuck Grassley.
Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Yes, I'm glad to be with you. And when you say busy, I would say we're going to be able, since we're meeting in August and normally don't meet during August, we're going to continue to have hearings on the president's nominees for circuit courts and district courts. But paralleling that will be probably in August just the behind-the-scenes work of the 21 members of the Judiciary Committee plus the staff, and maybe at this point more the staff. They will be going through the at least a million pages of documents we have on Brett Kavanaugh, most of it from his work either in the Bush White House or the 12 years he's been on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. We've got to go through all of that so that we can have a hearing, hopefully early September, on his nomination, and that hearing will take up at least 1 week of September.
So that's a lengthy process, as you said. You got to comb through 12 years of his opinions, 300 of those opinions on the appellate court, the circuit court level. And so you're going through all that. Staff's got to go through that. Each senator has to be brief. Right now, he is making his rounds there on Capitol Hill, sitting down, meeting with senators. How is that going?
Well, excellent so far. And finally, at least some Democrats have been brave enough to tell Schumer we're going to meet with him. I think Schumer was, he's a Democrat leader. He was discouraging or outright demanding that no Democrats meet with him. I think that'll break down in time because they can't justify not talking to him. And but, you know, before he was even selected, at least half of the Democrat caucus, which would be about 25 people, said that it didn't matter who Trump was going to appoint to the Supreme Court, they wouldn't be for it. And our hope is that we can get maybe 4 or 5 Democrats to vote for him. But we're in a kind of a ticklish situation from this standpoint that so many Democrats, I think every Democrat in my committee, for instance, is going to vote against him. They're going to vote no, but they want all these documents. Well, what more do they need to know to vote no? And but they're demanding every single email during his time working for George W. Bush at the White House that may even have his name in it. So you can see that they can't find anything wrong with the qualifications of Kavanaugh to be on the Supreme Court. So they're going. They want a fishing expedition to see what they can find wrong, even though he's qualified. I suppose to see what they can do to maybe stop it totally.
Right.
If they got one Republican to vote against him, it'd probably stop it, because we'll never, if we got five Democrat votes, it would only be after all the Republicans stuck together.
Hmm. Senator Grassley, it sounds like this is a typical play out of the Democratic playbook, and that is just to as you said, they're going to vote against him. This is just more of the delay tactics, obstructionism, that they just want to, all these documents, doesn't matter what's in the documents, they just want to eat up time to try to prevent him from being confirmed.
And let me read from a page I got in front of me, just so you know kind of what, how much is already available. If I had to summarize what I'll give you some idea of, it would add up to more documents than all the documents that we had for the five previous Supreme Court justices all added together. We're going to have more documentation on this one nominee. 939 pages from the Bush Library and the National Archives. We have 20,000 pages from his working in the Office of Independent Counsel. He submitted a 111-page questionnaire that's already on the website of the Judiciary Committee, so any of your listeners can go and read his questionnaire. There were 6,148 pages that were submitted as addendum to his questionnaire. Then you already mentioned 307 opinions. We've got at least 55 records of 55 of 117 speeches he's given. We've got 35 out of 72 panels he's served on. So you can see that the Senate will receive more records for Judge Kavanaugh than it did for these previous five Supreme Court nominees. And it would be five times what we had for the last Supreme Court justice, Kagan, that was in the neighborhood of about 180,000 pages.
Well, it sounds like you might wear out a few copiers to get all that stuff printed and passed around. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa, chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, my guest. Senator, what I've noticed is, you know, there was, as you said, before his name was even mentioned, you had 25 Democrats pledging to oppose him. You saw a lot of hysteria in the first 48, 72 hours after his announcement, the press playing along with him. But now it seems to have died down. Doesn't seem like any of the things that they were saying are really sticking with the public.
Because they're all saying, you know, doomsday. Every precedent of the Supreme Court dealing with social conservatism is going to be overturned. And they're never going to get any answer to that. And it's not Kavanaugh not wanting to answer the question. There's what we call the Ginsburg standard. No hints. Well, when she was asked, how are you going to vote on this particular case or that particular case? And she, back 25 years ago, she kind of set a standard for every Republican and Democrat person coming before the Supreme Court right now, when she said to the committee, I was even serving on the committee when she came before it, she said that judges, this is kind of a quote, a partial quote at least, judges are bound to decide concrete cases, not abstract issues. And she said there's not going to be, these are the exact words, no hints, no forecasts, no previews, and no special obligations, based upon somebody at that time asking her a question about how she might vote on something like that. And this is what Senator Chuck Schumer said at a press conference back in February. There is a grand tradition that I support that you can't ask a judge who's nominated for, or a potential judge who is nominated for, a judgeship about a specific case that might come before them.
Right.
But they're making a judgment that he's going to overturn some case that might not come before him for 10 years down the road.
Right.
Well, this gets to back to something very basic. Not only that I how I judge somebody going to the Supreme Court, but this is the way any judge at any level ought to be judged, because the person before that judge is promised equal justice before the law. So that means that a Supreme Court justice or any other judge has to look at the facts of the case and the law and or the Constitution and leave their own personal views out of it. So that's the sort of a person Judge Kavanaugh is. And that's the kind of people we need on the Supreme Court. We need people that are going to interpret the Constitution the way it was originally intended, and follow precedent or what the lawyers call stare decisis, and not put themselves in the place of a congressman
right.
by reading something in the law that the Congress didn't intend.
Which is what we've seen, and I think that's why I'm sure in your time on the Judiciary Committee you've seen the increasing volatility of the situation when a vacancy on the Supreme Court comes about. It just it is a huge fight, and this is another one of those epic battles, because the left yeah. relies on the court to do its legislating.
Yes. And that's why this is such a key course. If we have a majority that includes Kavanaugh, you're going to get legislating left to the Congress. And why that's important, if people don't like laws we pass or how we vote, they can vote us out of office.
Right.
But if a Supreme Court becomes a super legislature, they got lifetime appointments. You can't
right.
vote them out of office. It's contrary to the principles of representative government.
That's right. Absolutely. Well, Senator, we appreciate you taking time out to join us today. And as always, it's great to talk with you, Senator Grassley.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'll be glad to be with you again.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us. And I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.